Did you know that the perfect snack exists that not only has the yum factor, because that's important, but also packs a real protein punch? I'm talking about Wonderful Pistachios, a complete protein providing all 9 essential amino acids. Wonderful Pistachios is one of the highest protein nuts. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Now that's a snack you can feel really good about. It's hard for me to currently pick a fave because they have several flavors to choose from, including no salt and jalapeno lime options. But if I absolutely had to, I'd say I'm in my no shells, Wonderful Pistachios, sea salt and vinegar era. It's the ultimate snacking solution for when you need a quick, convenient, and tasty boost of pistachio goodness straight out of the bag. Whether you enjoy the ritual of cracking open each nut or you lean towards the ease of no shells, Wonderful Pistachios has something for everyone. It's time to elevate your snacking game with Wonderful Pistachios. Visit wonderfulpistachios.com to learn more.
I did everything I could to make it better. Like, I was practically begging this terrible person to try another way. Like, can we do this? Can I do this? And, you know, I'll pay half the rent for 6 months, even if I don't live there. I'll do all these things. So I think that what ended up happening was I cried so much and I really had a mental breakdown over trying to make this person see me as worthy enough to give me another chance.
Hey, welcome back to the Brown Girl Self-Care Podcast. My name is Bree. I'm the host of the show, as well as the founder of Brown Girl Self-Care. Brown Girl Self-Care is a platform and space of intentional healing, rest, joy, abundance, and all the juicy parts of life for Black women. Today, I have a guest. She is the author of Undiplomatic, How My Attitude Created the Best Kind of Trouble. Her name is Deesha Dyer. She's actually a whole vibe and a whole movement from her beginnings as a hip-hop journalist to just being all up in the White House, which is absolutely mind-blowing to me. Deesha's journey is like a testament to the power of perseverance and believing in yourself, even when things are shaky, while just staying true to yourself and still supporting your community. In today's conversation, we're going to be talking about self-love, imposter syndrome, working your way up, and just humble beginnings and all that stuff. So let's jump into this conversation. Hey, Deesha.
Hey, yes. It's so good to be here. Thank you for having me.
Your book, I have to tell you, is everything. Now, I have not been able to finish, but I promise you, it was so hard for me to put this book down. It was giving drama and shenanigans in a good way and just so like all these wonderful things. I want to talk about this. Let's go ahead and jump in. Tell us a little bit more about yourself, where you come from, and all that stuff.
Yes, exactly. So it's so good to be here with you today. So I hail from Philadelphia. So I am Philly girl through and through, raised in Philly, between Philly and Hershey, Pennsylvania. And, you know, I just had like a lot of people, humble beginnings, no aspirations to work in politics or anything like that. But I just kind of always let my curiosity lead me to different things, which included being a hip hop journalist and working in a mall and being a community advocate for different things. Then going back to college, which is when Barack Obama ran for presidency, ended up getting an internship. Curiosity led me to see if I could try and do it, and I did. And then getting hired and then promoted 3 times to the social secretary. After that, went into some philanthropy at the Ford Foundation, taught at Harvard, and now have my own business. And so it's been quite a journey, and now an author. So that's kind of who I am and where I come from.
That is wild. And when we say humble beginnings, we mean humble beginning.
Yeah, we do.
Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Yes. And so my parents are divorced and I ended up going to a boarding school for families with children that, you know, they're poor families, basically, I could say that. And it was very difficult just leaving my family and going to live in a random place called Hershey. But my brother also was there, which was nice. I didn't really understand being away from my family. I didn't understand why I had to go away. I think it was the best thing for me at the time, but it was a space in which back then, we didn't have these things telling us to stand up and speak your mind and all these things. We're a mouthy Black girl who constantly talked and constantly raised, like, I don't understand this and this isn't right. It was a hard place to be because there really wasn't a place for my voice or my dissent or my everything else. So it was more, you have an attitude, you're bad. A lot of things that we label probably a lot of young Black girls just because we don't know what to do with their voices. And so it took me some time to kind of get under my belt that I'm not going to change, that this is who I am, and I'll deal with the consequences of that. And then eventually found my way to work at the White House, where it was a space in working community, which were both the spaces where I was able to use my voice for good, right? And have people see good in me and good in my voice and being loud and being outspoken. So that was, but it didn't start off very easy for the simple fact of the same reason why we see a lot of Black girls criminalized or punished and other things. You just, you know, you're taken as a menace versus being like, maybe you have a gift for speaking. For maybe we can put you in the debate club, or we can put you in some kind of speech thing, or like we can give speeches. It was more of you were a nuisance. And so, yeah.
My gosh. Yeah, that lands for me in the happiest of ways. Like I see you because, you know, and I was going to ask you, I just reading your story, we had so many things in common from like just watching, for example, this, because I was born in late 75.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like I'm an 80s baby as well, because I was only like five in 1980. And so we had so many similarities, and a lot of things stood out to me, but some things hit so hard. Like just how you were saying, being a Black girl in this space, right? And obviously being very intelligent.
Mm-hmm.
I want to ask, was you a little slick with your mouth? Because I was definitely slick with my mouth.
And I think in the book I mentioned that although I say all of these things, there were times that I probably didn't need to get in trouble, right? Like I wasn't always, you know, but I think that's also just like I was a child. So the maturity in which you understand, you know, when not, you know, when you should not say nothing and when whatever, like I was still, our brains are still forming. So I think that I definitely was, I mean, I'm still slick with my mouth, but like, I think that like, you know, I definitely was. And I say in there, there were times where I probably deserved to get in trouble. But there were more times when I didn't, let's be honest. And it was just, you didn't do nothing else to do with me. So you went to punishment, you know.
And just standing out as that little Black girl. And you mentioned like how there were a few times just even trying to do your hair.
Yeah.
We know that's a whole process.
Do we ever?
Yeah. And a little girl taking on ownership of that.
Yeah. And back then we didn't have the natural hair movement. We didn't have, it was still like, you know, straighten your hair, you know, white is right. Like, you know. If your hair, you know, we watch Roots in school and it was like, oh, you have, you know, hair like Kunta Kinte. Like not all these things now. Right. And it's interesting because now I fast forward and I'd be like, yeah, it's not a thing for me. It's not an insult to me. And so I think that it was definitely a time where I had to, I'm looking back at it now in hindsight. But back then it was like, how can I conform myself? How can I change myself to be acceptable? Because that seems to be what we're supposed to do. But then it felt like I was a different, completely different person, right? You could have changed my name. I was so different. And I just didn't feel right to me. So I, you know, vowed to not ever try to change myself again.
Yes. Yeah. I've had to do similar because definitely like going back to that past, like it was so prevalent, all the white shows. And there were Black shows during that time. But people that are after us, you know, I'm going to generalize here, but it's just different for them as far as like the shows and stuff like that. But for us, it was Three's Company. It was, my show was Greatest American Hero, White Superhero.
Oh, wow.
Okay.
Yes. I'm watching it. I remember.
Moonlighting and all, and Golden Girl. So this is who I'm like, okay, this is the standard. Mm-hmm. I got to look like them. I got to talk like them. I've got to, or I'm not right. And then we did have the Black shows. They were few and far between. But you, in your book, you mentioned, like, for example, like Good Times. Great show. But we know what that was based on. The Jeffersons. But I mean, realistically, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. So anyway, yeah. And I didn't know that again until I got older. And I was like, wait a minute. So many of our shows were steeped in poverty. And then we had the other extreme of the Jeffersons who lived in this building, the East Side. And then it was like, they had all these fabulous parties. So it was just like these extremes of being like, I would love to be like the Jeffersons, but I identify more with the Sanfords, you know, the size of the world. But I really found a good, happy place with the Three's Company and all that. So yeah, it was just, and all that, what that does to our minds, we don't realize until we get older, you know? It's just like, it's like a little trip of being like, wow, I really digested all of that, right? Mm-hmm. Put myself in that world. It was like a fantasy world to like be in Three's Company. It was just, you know.
Yes, you hit the nail on the head. Definitely just like in La La Land for that 30-minute slice. Or for some of us, that was our whole day or afternoon, you know?
Exactly.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
One came up, the other came after the other came after the other. So it was great.
So then we get into like the late or mid to late 80s and 90s and things really start popping off with Black shows. But during that 70s, 80s, or whatever, it was just like, this is how I'm supposed to be.
Yeah, we survived them. We did it at the Cosby Show and all that stuff. But even so, in my world, you know, I was looking at these shows, even the Cosby Show, like, you know, I wish I was one of the Huxtables. Mm-hmm. Many of us thought that. It was just like, oh my gosh, this doctor, dad, this, you know, lawyer, and they had all these, you know, they had all these siblings and they were doing dances together. And I think that, you know, obviously we know now what we know about Bill Cosby, but I think that back then it was one of these shows that for me, my grandparents loved and my grandparents would tape it. But while it was great, it also put of that's how we need to be. There was no, so like we had to be the respectability part to be like whatever. And I was just like, so then everybody was shooting to be a lawyer or a doctor. And it was just like, well, if you're not that as a Black person, you're still excellent, you know, like it's okay. So then it became that. So it was always, you know, something, but it was definitely my life was definitely ruled by TV back then.
Oh my gosh. Yes, definitely the same. So we have this beautiful little Black girl who's, you know, starting to get out there into the real world. Mm-hmm. So I want to talk about the self-love and imposter syndrome and how you were able to navigate that as you started making some moves, let me tell you. Mm-hmm. And I saw a bunch of just like, I don't know what's going to happen. I'm going to lean into a little bit of faith, but I'm also just kind of like, well, because you also had like an attitude of like, well, if I don't get it, I don't care. Kind of like that self-protection kind of thing.
Yeah.
So can we talk about like just like the college experience and then also kind of like how you made your way to the freaking White House?
Yeah, well, my college experience was, you know, my first attempt at college was simply because we were told that we had to apply. So it was like we had to apply to college. That was the thing. There was no in between. There wasn't even a community college, tech school. It was either the military, which I most definitely wasn't doing. And then there was college. And so I think that for me, I didn't want to go to any college with an HBCU, but I didn't get into the one HBCU I applied to. And so I was just like, that was another ding for me that I was flawed. I was like, I'm a Black person who's trying to go to a Black school, but they're not accepting me. So what's wrong with me? I think that's not imposter syndrome, you know, just kind of being down on yourself. It doesn't just happen with one instance. I think it builds up over time. And I think a lot of that built up because I was, you know, the people that I loved and my roots I was away from. And so I had to build all these new, and I didn't know who I was, but then I was getting in trouble. So I think that for me, when I didn't get into that college and I got into another one, I wasn't really mature enough to even be going to college. I think that my mindset wasn't there. This happens a lot with a lot of our students. They're not ready for college, but we push them into it being like, but they'll get ready. Well, neither was I. There is no option of community or something else. And so me dropping out of the college I went to, which was University of Cincinnati within the first semester, it wasn't I didn't care, but it was almost expected. It was just like, of course I was going to drop out. Of course it wasn't going to work out because I'm not a school person. I don't have the money. I don't have the maturity. I can't sit in the classroom. I didn't understand. I didn't get it. And so once I dropped out and I kind of got involved more in the community, worked at a mall for a couple of years, like did my own thing, I really wanted to be a social worker. And so that is what took me back to school, or trying to go back to school, was that I was like, I'm doing all this community work, but I want a degree in this. And no college would take me at all. This is like 10 years later, except Community College of Philadelphia, which I ended up going to the same year that President Obama started to be on the scene. He was a junior senator. He started to give all these speeches. He was like held in the Democratic, you know, he's the future of the Democratic Party. And I didn't even understand all this. Like now I'm saying this language, like I know what I'm talking about. But back then I didn't know what none of this was. But I really thought I have to figure out a way to get to know this man because I like everything he's saying resonates with me. I'm so motivated. I'm so empowered. How can I do that? And then I got a White House internship application within my first year at community college. And that set it all off to apply for that and then get it.
That's amazing. So what was that? I mean, I know because I read the part, but what was that like when you got the call in your kitchen?
Yeah. I would say that it was shocking. I mean, I think that, again, back then, you know, there was not this big caller ID. It was like you could see who was calling, but like a lot of it now is more tech. It was like just a caller ID. And so I think that it was shocking to me that my application even made it to the desk of someone to look at, right? Because it has to go through multiple screenings and multiple people to get to the point where you get an interview. So the fact that my application package had lasted like through all these rounds, I think I was very shocked. I was very surprised. I couldn't believe it. I don't think I believed that I even, you know, that was even going to happen until I actually stepped foot in the place. Like, I was like, okay, I'm here. It's the first day of the internship. Now I know that it's happening. Like, before I was like, you know, they said I got it. I had a great interview, but, you know, who really knows? Because I was so full of doubt that this wasn't going to work out. And then once I got there, I was like, oh, this is really happening. So, yeah. So then I started 2009 and then I did the internship through the whole season until December 2009.
So how did that self-doubt, because that's like a big thing, you know what I mean? First of all, you got in. They wanted you.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how many people apply, but I'm sure, I mean, obviously they do their beyond due diligence to get you in there. Mm-hmm. Clearly they wanted you and your brilliance.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm going back to the little black girl, because that's me too, who told herself for years, like, either I'm not good enough, I'm not smart enough, I don't look the part, or I don't have enough money, I don't have the education, I don't have the degrees. Mm-hmm. And you go into this White House space. I ain't never been to the White House. This is a big moment. What's the little black girl inside of you saying when you step through the door?
You know, that's a great question. And I think that, you know, the way that I felt was, I felt like a little girl in the sense that the night that the president got elected, November 4th, 2008, you know, everything was so electric and magical. And it was just like seeing a different world through a child's eyes, this hope. Mm-hmm. And my eyes were so big with wonder. And mm-hmm. I think that when I walked inside of the White House for my internship in September of 2009, he had only been in office for 9 months. And so, you know, it was still freshly new to everybody that he was there, I think, to the staff and everyone else. And I think, you know, the child in me kind of like came alive in the sense of being like, huh? Like, it was almost like, you know, I can only compare it to like a Willy Wonka movie where, like, when they walk in and see all the chocolate and you're just like, huh? Like, you're just so mesmerized that you can't believe it. And I think that even though I was 31, which was definitely past the prime of an intern age, I was still very much this wonder and this, like, magical playground of being like, I can't believe that I'm here. I can't believe what I'm seeing. I can't believe this Black president and Black first lady and Black children are right in front of me. And that I'm looking outside, like, it was very much a childlike wonder that I think I kept for all those years, even through the promotions and the hard times and the doubting myself. I still kept that magic of what this is like to work in this space. I think, you know, I was just very much like eyes wide open and curiosity and jaw dropped, you know, the whole time from the day I walked in there to the day I walked out.
So how did you get to a place where you were able just to put that to the side, like the self-doubt and imposter syndrome? And does it still kind of like pop up for you from time to time?
Yeah, I would say that during the White House time, I was never in a place where I put that aside. I think that, you know, there was never, no matter what role I got, and that's part of the whole purpose of writing the book, was because I want people to understand that imposter syndrome and doubt, it does not come and go with accolades and accomplishment. Like, it is something that is deeply rooted from childhood. For me, it was from childhood, especially being a little Black girl who was told she was too loud or too dark or hair too kinky. Like, when you hear these things over and over again from your childhood, and then it takes on a different form in high school, takes on a different form in college, then you go to a job and you got microaggressions. Like, all these are the same, but they're in different forms, right? And I think that when you have to deal with that the whole way, you are at that point, it is so deeply seated in you that you just, it's not as simple as I got a promotion, it's gone.
Yeah.
And then you're questioning why you got it. You're wondering if, like, you know, you're going to be found out about it. So I think that one of the whole purposes of writing the book was to show people that, like, I understand how we think that this degree is going to cure this or whatever, but that self-doubt and imposter syndrome did not go away until after I got done at the White House and I went to I had some deep therapy and I, like, you know, learned to divorce from my accomplishments and my failures and just see who the foundation of me was before. And I think that that is the whole purpose of why I was like, I'm writing this book and people need this book, because a lot of books that are out now, they have this whole arc of like, then I achieved this and I felt great and the end. And you're just like, but wait, I achieved that and I didn't feel. So now I feel like more of a failure because that your book, I can't follow your book. And so for me, it still does pop up from now and then. especially when I do things that are new. You know, it's just like, I've never done this before. So I feel a little bit like, should I be in this space? And I think that we confuse being new at something and learning versus imposter syndrome or self-doubt. Like, if you're new at something, yeah, you don't know how to do it. Like, yeah, you act like you belong because you've never been there before. Like, you know, and let's give ourselves some grace there. And so it does pop up, but now I know it pops up in the sense of it's a flash. Like, it comes, and then I'm like, Deisha, like, I can talk myself out of it, or I can read or journal, or go for a walk, or remember who I am at my core, and it doesn't stick to me like it did.
Yes. I love that. So stay encouraged, Black woman.
Stay encouraged. And it's hard when you have the discouragement coming from so many different avenues, because there's just so much you can do about, like, you can't scroll Instagram all day and look for positive quotes. You can't listen to the podcast all day. So you're on your own. You know what I mean? Like, you can get up and pray and do whatever, but then you got to go to work. And then you're like, okay, like, and that's when it creeps back in, right? Like, when you're somewhere, you're in an environment in which there's other people and there's reminders and there's triggers, right? So, yeah.
That real life, like, yeah, real social life, media real and life. Podcasts, as much as I, because I listen to podcasts, obviously, you can read all the books.
Yeah.
Undiplomatic is a really good book, y'all, I promise you. But you can do all the things, but it's like, that's a part of it. You get a little, you get dopamine hits and you feel good and rah, rah, and I can do this. That's great. But it's beyond that, because life. And like, for me, self-care is like, including the self-doubt, the self-talk, the self-love, the imposter syndrome, like all that stuff. That's like an everyday work for me, you know, and how you said, like, you achieve. For example, you wrote a whole ass book. Excuse me. A whole book. Okay. You've been all up, traipsing all up and through the White House and what's the plane called? Air Force One. I don't even know, but you know. So you've done all the things.
And I think that's what we have to remind ourselves is, like, you know, and again, I always say for me, because everybody's different and we'll get critique. Like, without for me, I'm like, right. But for a lot of other people, imposter syndrome, again, I was just talking to my students that when your roots are rotted, or when they are moldy, that tree is going to still grow and the branches are still going to grow, but they're going to fall off quickly. You got to dig up the root, which is why that's chapter 2 for me, because that is the hard thing. Like, I was telling my students today, it is very easy to achieve something and be like, oh my gosh, I feel fully confident, but that's not realistic. It's going to wear off, or you're going to constantly be chasing this high of achievement to feel validated in who you are. So for me, I'm like, if I don't get something or something doesn't work out for me, I'm sad, I'm upset about it, but I don't take it as a dig on who I am as a person.
It's official, fall is here. So it's the perfect time to slow down and even simplify parts of your daily routine. Now, simple doesn't have to equal boring, especially when it comes to your makeup. Now, here's a tip. No matter what looks you're going for this season, do not forget the mascara. A great mascara pulls everything together, so it's an absolute must. This season, Thrive Cosmetics Liquid Lash Extensions Mascara is the must-have mascara. It lasts all day, it's gentle enough for my sensitive eyes, and their flake-free tubing formula dramatically lengthens and defines my lashes from root to tip. No clumps, no irritation, just longer, prettier lashes that make my eyes pop. Thrive Cosmetics uses clean ingredients, are 100% vegan certified, and they also give back to major causes, including domestic abuse. To me, this means that Thrive Cosmetics cares, and that's something that I can get behind 100%. Brighten up your fall look with Thrive Cosmetics, a luxury beauty that gives back. Right now, you can get an exclusive 20% off your first order at thrivecosmetics.com/self-care. That's Thrive Cosmetics, CAUSEMETICS.com/self-care for 20% off your first order.
It just didn't work out. Or maybe I didn't have enough education. Or maybe I, you know, somebody better. You know, like, I don't take it as a personal hit anymore.
Yeah, so, the reframe is necessary. Yeah, those stories will take you out.
They will get you. They will get you.
Absolutely. So I'm about to get all up in your business. I want to talk about relationships, singlehood. Yeah. What is going on the relationship front while you are building, like, Deisha, the boss? What's going on with your relationships?
Yeah, what I would say is that I really, like, when I went to the White House, I had a relationship and that kind of petered out partially because he stayed Philly. I went to D.C., you know, just natural things fell apart. But I think that this kind of goes back to the self-doubt and imposter syndrome, because it doesn't just affect your profession. For me, it didn't just affect my professional. It also affected my personal. So yeah. As toxic as things were in the professional side of my self-doubt and things like that, the same happened in my personal life. And so that meant that I attracted a certain kind of a person that probably wasn't healthy for me, or I sought out relationships that were fast, quick validation, dopamine hits, but weren't always healthy for me. I am very much open to whatever women and women identifying want to do with their bodies. Mm-hmm. If you want to sleep with a lot of people, feel free. If you want to have casual sex, feel free. There's nothing wrong with that. I think that for me, I was using those things as substitutions for feeling good about myself. And so when they didn't work out, I was always like, well, this didn't work out because like I was X, Y, Z or whatever. But meanwhile, I just didn't have my things together, or I didn't think enough about myself. I didn't respect myself enough for somebody to respect me at all either. And so I think, not saying that it was all my fault, but just saying that on the relationship side, I didn't really have one. I had a lot of casual flings. I had a lot of, you know, situationships. I lost sex with people. Like, it was just like, it was fun. Like, you know, and I think that, but for the most part, it was, you know, I was trying to find what fit. I was trying to find what would make me feel better, make me feel loved or pretty or valuable or beautiful or whatever else it was, which is still, to me, under the same bucket as imposter syndrome. It's still the same bucket of self-doubt, because I didn't have that respect really, or that understanding of myself or my body enough to give it what it needed at the source of like being healthy, right? And so I didn't have a relationship at the White House almost the entire time until the very end. And it was also an unhealthy relationship, right? And so is the very end is when I started dating somebody like for real, like a real relationship that was not associated with the White House or government. And so I was like 42. Mm-hmm. And then I got married to the person at 44. Mm-hmm. And so I think that for me, it was another sign, like for me, that I had to get myself together and stop looking at all these quick fixes. And remember that the quick fixes weren't negative. Some of them were like, I volunteered a lot. Yeah. And I did this because I was like using these things to be like, I got to prove I'm a good person. I got to prove it. I got to prove it. But really, I was already a good person upon birth. I was always worthy and valued. But I didn't understand that. So I took that out also in my personal life, too.
That whole thing about, I forget exactly what you said, so I'm paraphrasing, but it was like, but you served others because you, inside you were trying to prove yourself, maybe on a conscious level. Again, that's not your exact words, but yeah, I felt that because it made me think, like, because I'm the kind of person, like just yesterday, we went to Walgreens, you know, whatever, me and my daughter, and there was a gentleman outside. I could tell that he was homeless or whatever. And instantly my mind was like, oh, maybe I should go inside and get him some money and try to, or maybe I can go around the corner and buy him some food. How much of that is me outside of the serving, because you don't want to see people suffering? Is it me telling myself on some level, you still need to prove yourself? You're not good enough.
Yeah.
You need people to like you, or you need people to feel good about you, or this is the only way to feel good about yourself is when you're being on a serving level versus being, for example, I don't know, like on a leadership level, or just being yourself, or you know what I'm trying to say? So that really resonated with me.
And I think that the part about serving, it was more like, of course, I love to be in the community and I love community. And I was always constantly fed really great feedback. I'm just like, thank you for being here. We love you. And these are such a good person because you do all this, which are things I believe to be true. But also I use those things to like as a substitution for the healing that I had to do within myself. Again, quick dopamine, quick hits to like, you know, get me off of the track of self-doubt. But then I would go right back to it, or I'd have to keep doing these things to keep up with the validation. And so that was a really honest moment. When my students said today, they were just like, I'm having an honest moment with myself in class today. And I was like, you know what? Like, I've had a lot of those honest moments where it's that's exactly what it is. It's these honest moments of just like, it doesn't sound good. It doesn't sound pretty. And I have to admit it, but I feel free on the other side of admitting this. And I've also learned to sit with myself versus like having to do something to get validation. I'm just going to sit here in my house, just watch TV. I'm not going to, you know, be on Instagram like I donated to this and I did this, that, and the third. So people could be, and there's nothing wrong with that. Using it for different.
I feel you. So I talk a lot about cycles on the podcast, and I'm kind of still in this relationship part here for you. Like, when did the light go off and you say, you know what, I'm done with this cycle of these relationships being unhealthy for me? when did the light bulb go off? And how did you understand that you were worth more? And there might have been some things to, you know, fix within yourself, obviously, too. But when did the light bulb go off and you say, you know, I deserve better than this? And I'm not going back to these unhealthy cycles. And how did you start to separate yourself? Was that easy for you to do?
Hell no. So I think that the light bulb went off, I would say, when I turned 40 years old and I was in a really bad. And I was about to move in with the person, move into a new city, didn't know anybody, like move into a new city with this person. He was a terrible person. And we broke up. I did everything I could to make it better. Like, I was practically begging this terrible person to try another way. Like, can we do this? Can I do this? And, you know, I'll pay half the rent for 6 months, even if I don't live there. I'll do all these things. So I think that what ended up happening was I cried so much and I really had a mental breakdown over trying to make this person see me as worthy enough to give me another chance. It's not something I'm proud of, but I'm just honest about it because that's what made me, you know, look at myself and be like, as I'm writing the check to this person who was like, Deesha, don't give me any more money. I was like, no, I should give this to you because I made you get the place. And then we didn't work out because I didn't want to. Like, I had no backbone or spine. And I think as I was writing the check and walking to Bank of America in Brooklyn, I was literally like, what am I doing? Why am I I don't have a lot of money. So why am I doing that? It was a matter of seeing myself, like almost looking in the mirror, I'm looking at myself and looking so ghostly and worn down. And it was more of me realizing what I was tolerating. It was not like a normal, you know, like I deserve more. It was more of how did I let myself get to this space in which I'm saying that I am worth begging for this person. I'm paying for this person to continue paying attention to me. I was embarrassed for myself. And I think that that is when the light went off for me because I had no more money. I was living in a sublet. I was going from place to place. I was supposed to move in with him. And when I couldn't, I had to find some place to live. But I didn't know where I was going to live. It was just a mess all around. And I think that once he started to ignore me, and because he was just like, you're making a fool of yourself. He didn't say that, but he was like, and I was just like, oh my gosh, I really am. And I wouldn't say it was a light bulb as much as it was a reflection of me realizing that I allowed myself to be treated so bad. And I think what I had to do from there is I had to step back and cut the cord with everything. Like, I ended up going to a friend of mine has a drug rehab in Massachusetts, and I ended up going up there for 3 days without my phone. And, you know, she's like, we have a bed, like, if you want to come up and just, like, relax. And realizing that so many of the things that people go through in AA or NA, you know, which is all behind me now because I teach, but, like, you know, it is the same codependency and the same addiction behavior. And we like to, like, layer society as if we're better than. And I'm like, no, all these things I allowed myself to get addicted to and I allowed myself to disrespect myself, that was the catalyst for everything for me. And so that's when I took a full year of no social media. I went back to church. I started working out. I had a therapist. I had the privilege to do that. I got a great job at Ford Foundation. And I rebuilt my life. And that's when the change happened, is when I took some time. And then I started dating maybe a year and a half after all that happened. And then eventually found my husband. So, yeah.
Talk about just a full circle. Wow. That's amazing. So I know that we need to wrap up, but I want to know, like, so now these days, so you've gone through all these things and much more, obviously, than what we've had time to talk about on the podcast. But I want to find out now that you're kind of like on the other side of like a lot of that stuff. How are you finding ways or times, like, cause I'm assuming you're still very, very busy, but then you're also living a life and self-care is a whole job in itself.
Right.
So how are you finding balance, I guess, with all of this that you're doing?
Yeah, I think age has a lot to do with this, number one, because I can tolerate a lot less now than what I used to, right? Like, I think now, like, when I hear myself, I get sick of my own self-doubt sometimes. I'm just like, Deesha, like, what are you doing? But I think that part of me now balances in a way that I let my curiosity lead. I don't let my need for validation or anything else lead. And it was hard with the book because you need to be on social media and you need to like get good news. And so I knew that this was coming. And so last year I took a lot of time off of social media, get my mind ready for what was coming, the constant posts and the second and third. And I think that now for me, because I feel like I missed so much from age 10 to probably 40, that's 30 years that I feel like, I won't say I missed because I did amazing things, right? But I feel like I didn't give myself the credit and the love that I deserve. So what I'm trying to do now is go back. Like, it's like a circular motion at 46 to be like, let me go back to this person when the person was 15 or 17 or 19, whether that's going to an amusement park the other day, right? Like,
oh,
I didn't think about, like, you know, what does my outfit look like? And, oh my God, this boy like me. And like, oh my God, like, I didn't think about all these like weird little things you think about as a teenager. And then like, you know, we went go-karting the other day and then we did long walks. And so I think now I'm trying to balance it by, number one, kind of trying to recoup some of the time that I lost not loving myself. And then also diving into the things of child and children that we love. I think that Black girls especially, you know, our play ends at like 10, you know what I mean? Because like we've got these responsibilities or we're sexualized or criminalized or whatever else happens in our life. So a lot of us end up being adults at like 10, 12, 13, 14. And it's one of these things where I'm just like, that's what I had to do. So let me go back and see what I missed. And so now I'm covering the art of play and just like, it's silly. I don't care if I look silly, if I feel silly. That's why I tell these Black girls I want to dress up in anime or whatever. Do your thing. Like, do your thing.
Yes.
You want to experiment with blonde hair? Do your thing. Do your thing. Like, still be creative. Play with things. Play with expression. And so I think that now that's how I try to balance. But also, I need to be adult and make money. But like, that's how I try to balance now. I try to lean into curiosity and play because I just feel like I miss so much. And I try to really mute the people that like I feel like are trying to bring me back to this adulthood of being so conscious of it. And I'm like, I just want to live. Like, I just want to have fun, you know? So that's how I try to balance it. I don't always succeed. And I do try. I do try.
Yeah, I love that for you. So many beautiful things you said there. Severing ties with social media. Oh my God. I just have a love-hate relationship with social media.
Right.
A lot of Black people that are in the creative space do. My numbers are dropping like flies because you get penalized, you get punished. I don't want to show up on social media like that. And I've taken a very long break and my page has suffered because of that. It's like, it's a machine. You got to constantly be feeding it. I don't want to live like that. I don't want to do that.
Period.
So just trying to figure out ways to navigate that. That in itself is just a whole other thing. So kudos to you for doing what makes sense for you. And then the whole play thing. Like, yes, girl. Yes. I want to high five you through the screen because, like, first of all, the anime thing, that's my daughter all day, every day.
Oh, really?
Oh, my gosh. She's 21.
Huge. Oh, I love it.
Anime, Naruto, and all this other. She has me watching all this crazy stuff. I watch for her benefit, but she's heavily into that and gaming and stuff like that. So more power to you, sis.
I love that.
For me, it looked like going and buying a Nintendo Switch just this year and playing Breath of the Wild, Legend of Zelda, all day, every day. Okay? Because that whole play thing that was snatched from a lot of little Black girls.
That's right.
So when we say reclaim your joy, that includes play, whatever it looks like for you. Do more of that. Okay.
Yeah, do more of it. Do more of it. I don't care about that anymore. Like, I'm not even putting half this stuff on social media, but I think that it is something to rediscover more, not to get too morbid, but like, look at the fact that I'm 46 and essentially half of my life is over, right?
Yeah.
And so I'm just like, I look at it as I have such a privilege to live the next, whatever God get 40, whatever year, being so free from what I was the first. And so like my little spidey senses are like, oh, what can I, like, can we move abroad? Oh, we can. So I'm like, now I'm just trying to like do things that I'm just like, I wish I had, not the guts, but I wish I had the love or the maturity to do then. But I just am thankful that I'm still here and breathing to do it now. But I always want to recognize that I know I do have privilege. I have a great husband, you know, who encourages me to do stuff like that. But I think that I just want all Black girls, but women and girls can get there. And I know it's harder for different people to go to responsibilities, but I'm just like, don't let nobody keep stealing this play from you, this joy, this magnificent being that you are. And I don't care what you look like. I don't care where you work. You don't gotta be no kind of Black excellence for me. Like, be who you are, and I'm gonna love you because of that.
So I guess final thoughts, Deesha, not only am I gonna be nosy and ask what's kind of on the horizon for you, and if there's nothing on the horizon, great. But also, what are some final words you might have for the Black woman who may have some aspirations of something that feels bigger than her? And she came from humble beginnings and she's still kind of struggling with her worth. Can we talk about just a little bit more?
Yeah. What I'll say on the horizon for me is You know, I think that right now, you know, the book just came out less than 2 months ago. So still kind of in the thick of the book and seeing how that's going to launch or what I'm going to do with that.
Yeah.
I think a dream of mine has always been to move overseas. And so I think it is trying to figure out what that looks like, and not forever, but just a year or two. And I'm really trying to put my life in motion to achieve that, because I've always wanted to do that. And so I think that those are some things on the horizon for me, figuring out if I want to like work for somebody again in my life, not quite sure, but I think something like that. But I think that the advice and the words that I will give is that we live in such a place in isolation, especially after COVID, where, you know, you hear this podcast, you hear my voice, you hear your voice, you see stuff on Instagram, whatever, that makes you feel good for a moment. What I would say to Black girls is, like, we are community. Like, we are a vibe. We are everything. And I know that you don't understand that once you're by yourself and this is turned off and the real world comes in. But what I would say is find your community of people. I don't care if they're weird. I don't care who they are. That can big you up, that can love on you when you can't love on yourself, because it's not realistic that we're going to love ourselves 100% of the time. But when you, the times in which you kind of falter, there needs to be somebody there that's like, nah, like, I got you. Like, I got you. And so I think that, you know, Black women believe in the balance of not everything's going to be great. It'll be a balance of good and bad or whatever. But make sure that you get help and that you reach out to people, whether it's therapy, taking medicine, you know, do what you got to do. I refuse to, if I can, lose anybody else. And I feel like we are in a stage of a lot of Black girls, Black women cutting themselves and unaliving themselves, deep depressions and all those things that we don't take seriously. And the little thing turns into a big thing, turns into a big thing, and we're afraid to ask for help. But what I would say is that we are a community and that you are loved beyond measure, how you are, rollers, no hair, all hair. And so that is my thing. And my thing about going after something is there is nothing to lose by going after something. Like, you, number one, the lies that we have been told about what we cannot achieve is ridiculous. Like, we can achieve probably everything we think we can and we doubt. We can do it. It's going to be harder for us because people don't want to see us in power.
Yes.
But it's possible. It's possible. Obviously, some things, like, I'm not going to go do heart surgery tomorrow, but I feel like those things, those voices, those whatever that are telling you that you can't do or it's too big, are voices of oppression. They're not yours. They're just not yours. And so these are voices of oppression over years. We need to silence those and just keep moving forward. And know that you change your mind. If you don't want to do it no more, then don't do it. You know, you're allowed to change your mind. But that's what I say to that.
Listen, Deesha coming through with that good word today. You have such a vibe.
Oh, thank you so much. You are too. This is lovely. I loved it. I love your hair too. Your hair looks so fun. I'm like, I'll be trying to get my hair.
Don't be going, child. Don't be going. Listen, you look, when I saw you, I was just like, okay, she coming through today.
And I'm teaching at the prison. I don't think I look a mess. I'm like, I'm a little mad. But thank you.
No, I love the hair. I haven't had, I have a 5 head, so I do have to have like a little bang sometimes.
Oh, you like a little something in the front.
I have a little something. Because like fat pants, he's like showing up like, hey, what's up, y'all? It's just taking a whole new life. So we got 4 heads. But I love it. I love everything about you, Deesha. And if there is anything that I can do with my little power and platform to support you in the future, please do not be a stranger. So we're going to wrap up. Again, tell us the name of your book and where we can find you online.
Yes. So my book is Undiplomatic, How My Attitude Created the Best Kind of Trouble. You can find it wherever you get books. It is available in audio. It's available in hard copy. A book about imposter syndrome, rising in the White House, has some fun stories, some fun lessons. Make you laugh, make you cry, you will enjoy it. You can also look at DeeshaDyer.com, my first and last name. That shows where I'm going to be coming up next, where you also can get the book. And then you can find me mostly active on Instagram, which is DeeDyer267. So DeeDyer267. But I'm on all the platforms now and then, as authors have to do.
So I will make sure that I put that information in the show notes. With that said, I just want to thank you so much for being here. Thank you for the sisterhood that you share with me today and this getting to vibe with you and be in community with you online. I love everything about that.
Thank you.
It's been a pleasure. So that is it for today's episode of the Brown Girl Self-Care Podcast. I want to thank my very special guest and give her all the flowers today, Ms. Deesha Dyer. Please go get the book. I promise you will not regret picking this book up. It's a whole mood. And that's it. So thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, if you want to come back, let us know.
Yes.
Anytime.
Yes,
you are always, door is open for you, Deesha. Okay, you let me know. You're welcome. So that's it for this episode. Have a blessed week. And I will see you on another episode of the Brown Girl Self-Care Podcast. Take care.